Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Driving Me Crazy, coming to you live from Beechtree Studios near beautiful Pinehurst, North Carolina. This is the only show where a husband and wife drive, talk cars and life, and still love one another each day. Here's John and Laurie. Or is it Laurie and John? Oh, take it away, you crazy kids.
Good morning, Andy.
Well, is it Laurie and John? Good morning.
Well, it's Laurie, but Johnny is over there somewhere. It's Laurie and John. Good morning, Hezzy. Good morning, radio
Good
audience.
Good morning. So tell us where you are, because you're buying a car, hopefully.
Yes, well, this is it. We're at Cooper Ford in Southern Pines,
right,
North Carolina. And Mike Thomas, who has sold Johnny cars in the past, is the man of the hour. He is actually coming. We will introduce Mike right now. Mike, we're live out of New York City on the radio. Mike knew nothing about this, but our topic of discussion today, folks, is buying a previously owned car and why that has been increasingly more difficult these days. So hold on, and let me put you on speaker so you can speak to both Johnny and Mike. Hold on.
Okay.
Okay, here we are.
It's actually been easier to get a used car, harder to get a new car. This is
That's
Mike
what
Thomas.
I understand.
Yeah,
good morning, Mrs.
Mike
Thomas. What a pleasure to meet you on the phone.
Mike is a friend and a car and used our car salesman, and I've known him at two or three places. We've done several transactions together. He's a nice person to do business with.
Thank you, John. Hi.
I agree.
Ford. But, yes, the used car market's been a little challenging this year, mainly because, obviously, the new cars have been
hard to come by
and slow to after an order, it's a little delayed in getting them in. So anyway, with that said, the used car prices have been up a little bit higher than normal, and also they're scarce, mainly because we can't get any new cars at this time. But it's still an exciting time with Ford Motor Company. We've got a lot of new things coming down the pipeline. The electric cars and a lot of hybrids are coming up over, and the public seems to be open to that.
The hybrids, we've had this discussion.
Do you think the public is aware that there are really some very, very good pricing for cars in the used car market, and they get a good rate for it? Well, it looks like we lost you. Okay. Well, evidently we lost our connection in Southern Pines with Cooper Ford, and hopefully they'll be calling back. And it's really very interesting because, as the gentleman from Cooper Ford mentioned, the new car market is always there, and it's still there, except it's so difficult to get vehicles because of a shortage of all kinds of particularly chips in order to run the new equipment, and they're just, the chips are very difficult to come by. So if you don't have the chips to move the car seat, then you don't have a movable car seat, and so on and so forth. So it's stuff like that ends up coming into play. And in the used car market, you can get a lot of cars that are with low mileage and are pretty new, could be 2 or 3 or 4 years old with low mileage, and that's what's terrific about it. Hold on a second as we're getting a call again. Bear with me a moment. For some reason, it's not going through. 1 second. Oh, goodness. I don't know why this is not happening, because the call is in, but we can't seem to connect it. I don't know what the problem is. Okay. I really don't understand what it is. Hold on a minute. Let me see if I could do something a little differently. Well, I can't. Well, whatever the case is, they'll try again to call back. So the opportunity to buy a new vehicle, well, actually to buy a vehicle, maybe new to you, but it could be in the used car lot, I don't know what these people are doing, but whatever it is, they're not connecting. So let me just try one more thing here and see if I can grab this. 1 second, because they're not picking up. 1 minute. 1 second. I'm sorry, folks. Technical difficulties, as they say. We'll give them a call, and hopefully they'll pick up.
The wireless customer you are calling is not available. Please try again later.
El cliente de servicio móvil al que llama, ¿no?
All right. So evidently they're not available. Let's see if they're available now. We'll try them one more time, and we'll see if they can pick up.
The wireless customer you are calling is not available. Please try again later.
And I don't know what they've done at their end, but it's not coming through. So I think there's a problem here. It's not with our system because I was able to connect before. Where it looks like maybe we got them this time. Hello?
Hello?
Is this Lori or
Hello?
John?
Yes, it's Lori. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, good. Hezzy, we got disconnected, and then then the recording came on.
Please
saying,
don't repeat it. I've been talking for 5 minutes. I know you've been disconnected.
I'm so sorry. In any case,
no problem.
Here we are. Let me go on about what we experienced, because as we were saying, Johnny and I actually have gone to several local car dealerships looking to buy another used car. Now, what has happened, and motivation for this is quite interesting. For 35 years, nonstop, I myself have been delivered a new car, sometimes a pre-production car,
really?
From all the manufacturers, with the exception of Rolls-Royce. I would have loved that, or any of the really highbrow brands. And I have test driven, I don't know how many hundreds of cars across the years. However, it started with the microchip problem, and although that seems to be getting resolved, it is actually exacerbated into other problems. And those problems are specific to certain makes and models and parts of cars.
Uh-huh.
And the new car manufacturers are having a great deal of different parts for certain cars. And so as a result, getting new cars has been very difficult for most dealerships. And then even more difficult, because new cars are less accessible, is buying used cars. So when a good used car comes on the market, and what I mean by that is a car that is fairly young, within 2 or 3 years of the date of manufacture, and very low mileage. Mm-hmm. Now, by that, I mean, if you're lucky, 10, 15,000, anything under, say, 25,000 miles for a car that's 2 years old. The rule of thumb is that a car will not exceed 10 to 12,000 miles a year. And that's optimal. That's the rule of thumb. But when a car comes in that has very low mileage and is young, then it will be gone the same day. So Johnny and I have gone around to several dealerships that we have personal relationships with and got a sense of what was going on. Now, so what I did last month is I bought a Cadillac SUV. And it is a 2016. I bought it with 62,000 miles on it, which is not exactly low. But again, now you've got to weigh it against the manufacturer, Hezzy. And Cadillac, as we know, is built like a tank. The beauty about Cadillac versus Mercedes or any of the import foreign cars is that although it is not inexpensive on repairs, it is a whole lot less expensive than, say, if you're repairing a Mercedes-Benz, a lot less expensive. So I weighed that, and I'm actually sitting in this Cadillac as we speak because we are at Cooper Ford in Southern Pines, North Carolina. Johnny has just actually gone off on a test drive with a car he's looking at. But we, as I said, have gone to other dealerships. Now, for example, we went to one dealership that had a knockdown dead gorgeous Audi small SUV. And it only had 10,000 miles on it, and it was only two years old. Perfect. But it was $37,000, $38,000. Okay, what's wrong with that? For an Audi, nothing's wrong with that. Great. But what can you buy today, if you could find it, for $38,000? And where does that take us, Hezzy? It takes us back to Hyundai. It takes us back to Ford. It takes us back to even Jeep, because you can buy a brand new car for that money, okay, and has Zippo miles on it. And so you have to weigh it out. It's a bit of a balance act. Now, we went to a different dealership.
Well, I got to ask you, before you go on to the other dealerships, when you get a used car at a low mileage rate, and you compare it to the new car prices, is it worth buying a car, you know, for $38,000 that's a used car?
Well, and again,
or is that dependent on what? How do you judge that?
Perfect example would be Volvo. Okay, there are Volvos on the road that have exceeded 500,000 miles. There are even Volvos on the road that are cresting 1,000,000 miles. Okay,
right.
So we know
I've heard that
Volvo has huge longevity.
Correct.
If I found, and I won't name any names, but if I found a brand new car, that I knew would not ever have that kind of longevity, and it was maybe a car that I wanted to keep for 10 years or more, then I would go with the Volvo, because I know, and I know my Volvos, but I know that I'm going to be in that Volvo for 10, 20 years with proper care and maintenance, and that's the key. No matter what you're driving, if you don't have your regular oil changes and actually get something like synthetic oil, which is more expensive but lasts longer and is better for your engine, if you don't make sure that your tires are rotated on a regular basis, if you don't go through a regular engine check like you would for a physical, then you're doing a great disservice to yourself and your vehicle. So, so it depends really truly on the make. Now, one of the cars that we also looked at was a 2004 Jaguar four-door sedan to die for. And this is why living where we do, it was absolutely stunning. That kind of light, mossy blue-green. Beautiful.
Yeah,
and it had the Jaguar hood
on
it.
Great color, too.
Gorgeous. Super, super car. But listen to this, Hezzy. This is very interesting. This was a vehicle that had been owned by one couple who were elderly, and they pretty much took that car out for a walk every so often since they bought it new in 2004. It had like 38,000 miles on it. That's nothing for a Jaguar. But listen to this.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you the question. How much do you think that car cost?
I have no clue. Can't even imagine.
$8,000.
Oh my God, that's a steal.
$8,000.
That's a steal.
Now, and in 2 years, that's going to be considered one of the great classic Jaguars. Now, why did not we buy this classic potential Jaguar? We didn't buy it because it was a rear-wheel drive vehicle, which is fine down south, but not good up north in the winter, as you well know. You need front-wheel drive, not all-wheel drive. And we go up north.
Right, you go up north.
And also, we had a friend, God rest his soul, he's no longer with us, who loved Jaguars, and he used to say there are, how did he put it there? The reason why the 80% of Jaguars made are on the road, 20% made at home, and it's because Jaguar does have a reputation of breaking down. And talking about repairs, not only is it very expensive to repair, but you've got to have somebody who knows how to repair it. So we actually passed on that because it wasn't what we were looking for. And to be honest, we didn't have an additional garage space. That's not a car you're going to leave outside in the elements all year long. It has to be garaged.
Right.
So there's so many factors. Now, we went to another dealership.
Well, do you think, before you go on to the other dealership, those factors, most people are not aware of what they are. I wonder why, that would be something that would be wonderful if you would write about, if you have the time, because I know you're busy with so many other things. But I've never seen a book or anything that would describe that. to help people consider a used vehicle.
And maybe I should, because it really, I mean, you know, like I said, there are cars out there that will last forever. There are Land Rovers that have been around since, you know, the beginning of time. Expensive to repair, but my gosh, I mean, they'll take you anywhere. And Cadillac. Now, and it is a fascinating subject. Now, we went to Clark, you know, because we've spoken about them so often. I bought my Cadillac, Clark Cadillac Chevrolet. Now, the reason that I bought my car at Clark Cadillac Chevrolet in Pinehurst, North Carolina, is because these people, it's a family-run business. It has been for like 40 years. The father started it. The two sons work. The father retired. The service that you get there is second to none. You don't have to question whether they're, you know, telling you the truth or not. I mean, I'm not saying that car dealers do that, but let's face it, dealers are in the business of selling cars. But whatever they bring onto the lot, they stand by. And so I bought this Cadillac from them, and I got it. We took a road trip right off the bat, and the windshield wipers needed to be replaced, and the tires needed to be rotated. And I took it back, and they did it instantly for no cost whatsoever to me, because it was, they felt it was their obligation. When you have a dealer who will go the extra step, that's as valuable to you as the car you decide to buy. Now,
I think you're right. The dealership matters a great deal, and they need to have a reputation, and that makes a big difference between one and the next.
And Hezzy, you're absolutely right. If you're driving a car every day, that is part of your daily life. You want to be able to have somebody that can ensure that your wherewithal every day on four wheels is going to be secure, and that if you've got a question or a need, they will, you know, follow that. So here's the story. Yep. So Johnny and I went back to we went back to Clark to get another car. We're at Cooper today, but we went back to Clark. And what happened was they've got like two cars available on their used car lot and cars really available in their new car section, because what they've been doing, because they're so beloved, people come to them and say, order me this car, this is what I want. These are the options. This is the color. This is what the interior. And so they're selling cars like crazy, but you can't see them because they're on order, and there are no used cars. It's a and so now our listeners may say, well, our used car lots here are full of used and new cars. But again, you've got to weigh it about against the business itself. And we know that with Clark, we have an incredible, you know, business there that's going to be supportive of you. Now, here we are at Cooper. Why are we at Cooper? Johnny drove, as you know, a red Ford Flex. He had bought it in 2010, and this was his baby. Every 2 weeks, the car wash, it was garaged, the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
But what happened, Tessie? What happened was when you have a car from 2010, which is what Johnny had, it does not have all these new developments that we see in cars today. It didn't have a backup camera. It didn't have a GPS system. It didn't have the alerts, the traffic alerts, the backup alerts. This is a statement that you will hear nowhere but here, Hezzy. As we get older, and as cars offer more in the realm of security and safety, we gravitate toward driving a fully equipped car with those options. And in some cars, they are no longer options. They're part of the price.
Exactly. Well, thank you for expressing that, because that's the way I feel. Because I guess I've gotten older and older, and maybe that's unique. But the point is, I'm looking for those things. Those attributes are important today.
And the thing is, Johnny especially, he's a case in point. Johnny's never been able to, if Johnny's focused on something, he's focused on something. And so what happens is, he may be driving, but an alert will come on that he might not have responded to if it was just him relying on his own, you know, devices. So when that alert comes on, it's potentially saving him from an accident. And so what happened was his car became too dated. Now, they just pulled up. He is now sitting the same exact one that he had before, except this is gray and it's only 1 year old. And he knows this car. He's comfortable with this car. But the beautiful thing about this car is it's got all the safety and alerts that he could possibly want. So they've just come back from their little ride drive, and we're going to go back to them and let Johnny and Mike tell you about the drive. Hold on.
Okay. Thank you, Lori.
Me?
How are you, Johnny? Okay, you're cutting out now. I can hear you.
And I'd had it for a long, long time, as you know, because it was 2011, and I got it. But within the last 5 years, I guess it was, they've added all of these new safety features, and that's the one thing, because the one thing I always talk about and concentrate on when we're talking about cars are the safety features. The things like, you know, that collision alert that they'll stop you. It'll stop you before you get in a collision. Anything that keeps you out of a wreck is important to me. And every year they come out with new features that really make cars safer to drive. And I like that. So anyway, Danny needed a second car. Lori probably needed a car, as Lori probably told you. And so I talked to Mike. And it's interesting because I came up and looked at a new Ford Edge. I've been looking at several things. I came up and looked at a new one. I said, well, I don't know what I want to do. Do you ever get them in that are used but have low mileage? And Mike said, well, you never know. And then he called me later that day, and a fella had called him who's in a retirement home and wanted to trade in his 2019, we're sitting in it now, 2019 Ford Edge that only has 22,000 miles on it. So we're talking about 21, and now it has a 22. So it's less than 6,000 miles, up 6,000 miles a year. So it's a beautiful vehicle. I haven't even cleaned it up, but it's a beautiful vehicle and all of those bells and whistles that we were talking about. So it's good.
Well, those are very important, especially now that I've gotten older. Yeah, I can hear you. So even especially since I've gotten older, I realize that, you know, some of the sensibility and capacity to respond quickly are not there as they were 20 years ago. So I think all this new equipment is really important.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. That's what I said. Even we were looking at a 2000 and Lori was looking at a 2008. No, let's see, 2015. It's amazing how much changes, how many changes there have been in just the last 7 years. I mean, mine was a 2011, and it didn't have a rear-view camera. It had a beeping system so that if you were backing up and got close to something, it would beep at you. I mean,
I
rear-view cameras.
That.
Yeah, rear-view cameras are standard today. Not only rear-view cameras, but 360-degree views that show you what's going on around your vehicle and when you're getting close to something in any direction, front, side, corners.
Right.
It's amazing, and it only gets better every year, which should improve our insurance rates, but I don't see that going down.
Well, they'll be the last to know. You know what it is? They probably have to gauge to see if all this new technology actually alleviates some of the costs over time. And I think that'll be a learning process.
Yeah.
For the insurance company.
Right. But anyway, I don't think, as you well know, I don't think gasoline-powered vehicles are going to go away anytime soon. I don't care what the government says. And so if you can't buy a new vehicle, then certainly buying a good used vehicle, I mean, and it takes some shopping. You don't just go on the lot and find one. There'll be a lot of nice vehicles but a lot of them are, and they're in good shape, but they may have high mileage on them. And again, nothing wrong with that if your purpose, like ours, we don't drive very far. But if mm-hmm. you don't mind that, the Cadillac that we bought for Lori is a 2016, I think, and mm-hmm. it only had like 50,000 miles on it, and it's a great
right.
great vehicle because again we don't go very far, so this is a very comfortable vehicle for her to drive.
Exactly.
So, Henry, this is Lori again. Yep. I think we're going to wrap up.
Hi,
Lori. Our time is up. Yeah, is our time up?
It's okay, because I know you're engaged in buying the car, so that's important, and I appreciate that. Much success.
Thank you so much, Hezzy. But just to wrap up, it is a very interesting dynamic. If you're to buy a car these days, new or used, depending on the make, mileage, and year. So good luck
Absolutely.
To all if you're in the market, and Hezzy will talk to you next week.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for the guidance, because I think I've not really seen that sort of guidance anywhere about used cars, and it's a really important option that a lot of people will consider if they knew what they were doing. So
yes, it is.
Thanks for
it
the
is.
Input.
Yes, and if Listen, anybody
a
ever
pleasure
has any questions.
And all the best.
Thank you so much.
No,
we'll talk
I'm
to you next
good.
Week. Goodbye, folks. Bye-bye.
Take care. Be well. Bye.
You too.
Well, there we have it, folks, none other than John and Lori Wiles from the Driving Me Crazy crowd. They're actually the duo. And I don't know about you, but I found it really very pertinent because so much as they were able to bring up a lot of points that normally are not covered anywhere else, which is really important. I was hoping I could get a hold of Brian Harrod from Yonkers Newswire, but unfortunately he's not available today. Normally we speak to him on Thursdays at 10:30 for about a half an hour, but evidently he's not available today. So even though I had noted that I thought he would be, he's not. So unfortunately, I hope everything's well with him, but I guess he must be busy, and that's the way life is. So let's look at some other things which I think you may find of some value. Bear with me a moment here. And let me just move on and cover some other things that I think may be pertinent. Bear with me a moment. I've got to move on to different screens. One second. One moment here. Yeah, I don't know if you've heard about this, but this is really quite interesting. I've never been there, but at the Cross County Center, Sticky's, the finger joint, has opened up. They opened up on the first of the month, on September 1. They have, Cross County Shopping Center is the iconic outdoor shopping destination, and they've welcomed Sticky's The Finger Joint. It's a popular New York City-based fried chicken restaurant. What's nice about it is that they not only have indoor dining, but also outdoor dining, which is really terrific. And they're right across the gap at Cross County, and they're at the former home of the BGR Burger Joint that evidently closed. Really a big place, 1,740 square feet, and really very, very interesting, that's for sure. And so we wish them well. It's wonderful that they opened up here. The firm was founded about 10 years ago in Greenwich Village, and they bill themselves as New York City's finest gourmet chicken finger restaurant. So if you go there, you know, you could check that out.
besides chicken fingers, Sticky's menu also contains chicken thigh poppers, sandwiches, and wraps made from scratch with premium ingredients, we understand. And they've got 18 homemade dipping sauces, ranging in flavors from as general Sticky Toe to Sassy Barbecue to Sunny Mustard to Nashville Numb. Boy, it sounds like a very interesting flavors to go through. So that might be something that you might find interesting as a new destination to check out. And let's look at something that's coming up. There is going to be a jazz festival in White Plains, and it's going to begin on the 14th of September all the way through the 18th. The headliners include the Joey Alexander Trio, the Buster Williams Quartet. They're known for something more. Then there's Grace Kelly and Reagan Whiteside. So this sounds like the place to be, and I think you might find it really interesting, that's for sure. So you could read about it as well on the Yonkers Tribune website, and let's just look and see what else is going on. Bear with me a moment here. And let's look at some of the news. Bear with me a moment as I pick this stuff up. Unfortunately, Queen Elizabeth II has been placed under medical supervision at the Balmoral Castle. Seems that doctors have medical concerns for the 96-year-old. Relatives have rushed to her side as she is placed under medical supervision at her Scottish estate. Well, the United Kingdom's Queen Elizabeth II has been placed under medical supervision over concerns for her health, the royal family announced today. And following further evaluation this morning, the Queen's doctors are concerned for Her Majesty's health and have recommended she remain under medical supervision. That's what the family statement had said. The Queen remains comfortable and at Balmoral Castle, the Scottish estate where she has spent the summer. The palace did not provide further details on the seriousness of her condition. She is 96 years old, and her eldest son and heir, Prince Charles, traveled to Balmoral following the news, joined by his wife, Camilla, and sister, Princess Anne. Charles' son, Prince William, was also on his way, officials had said, reportedly followed by the Queen's second son, Prince Andrew. Now, Prince Harry and his wife Meghan were also traveling to Balmoral, a spokesperson for the couple had said. On Wednesday, the monarch canceled a virtual meeting of her Privy Council after being advised to rest. She had been suffering from episodic mobility problems, quote-unquote, since the end of last year, according to royal officials, and contracted COVID-19 in February. In October, Queen Elizabeth spent the night in hospital. Now, the monarch, Britain's head of state, has increasingly handed over official duties to Prince Charles and other royal family members. She has recently missed other high-profile events, including this year's state opening of Parliament and the Platinum Jubilee concert. Her husband of 70 years, Prince Philip, died in April of last year. So, Prime Minister Liz Truss, who was appointed by the Queen on Tuesday, said she was thinking of her in a post on Twitter. And she wrote, "My thoughts and the thoughts of people across our United Kingdom are with Her Majesty, the Queen, and her family at this time," she wrote. Well, the Speaker of the British Parliament said that Queen Elizabeth was in the House's thoughts, and I know I speak on behalf of the entire House, meaning House of Commons, when I say we send all the best wishes to Her Majesty the Queen. That's what Lindsay Hoyle said in the House of Commons. Opposition Labour leader Keir Starmer said, quote,
along with the rest of the country, I am deeply worried by the news from Buckingham Palace this afternoon. End quote. The Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, who is the highest-ranking cleric in the Church of England, which is headed by the Queen, said she was in his prayers. May God's presence strengthen and comfort Her Majesty, her family, and those who are caring for her at Balmoral, he said in a post on Twitter. Unbelievable. 96 is not young, but the Queen has been, I don't know, insurmountable in her capacity. And, you know, to lose her would be a devastation. It's impossible to replace her. And I guess we all have our time, and we can only wish her the best. And that's what's really important. Now, let's look at some other things that are happening in Europe, because they matter. The European Central Bank has hiked interest rates by 75 basis points. The European Central Bank has decided to raise Eurozone interest rates by a record 75 basis points as it tries to rein in inflation. The European Central Bank, the ECB, has announced it will be hiking interest rates by 75 basis points, making it the second straight rate increase. It's the largest rate increase in the 25 member governing council of the European Central Bank, made in a single session. However, the benchmark rate for lending to banks now stands at just 1.25%, which is still an exceedingly low level by historical deposit rate, which is the rate that defines the interest banks receive for depositing money with a central bank overnight, stands at 0.75%. Well, the Governing Council took today's decision and expects to raise interest rates further because inflation remains far too high and is likely to stay above target for an extended period, the European Central Bank said in a statement. Well, year-on-year inflation in the Eurozone stood at 8.9% in July, and first predictions for August put the rate tentatively at 9.1%. Well, the European Central Bank was rather late to join the U.S. Federal Reserve and other central banks in the global rush to raise rates to combat inflation. The increase is aimed at raising borrowing rates or costs for consumers, businesses, and governments. And this theoretically slows spending and investment while taking the heat off of consumer prices by reducing demand for goods. The European Central Bank, like many other central banks for developed Western economies, has consistently held interest rates at or near zero almost without interruption since the so-called financial crash of 2008. Target was to promote economic growth and moderate inflation of around 2%. For years, these historical low rates barely kept growth positive and did not boost inflation, but low global supply disruptions amid the COVID pandemic, followed by the war in Ukraine's crisis, such as food and fuel, have now combined to push inflation up towards 10%, prompting banks to raise rates to try to rein it back in. Now, Russia's cutback to supply natural gas has also driven up prices. Moscow has blamed technical issues for the cuts, but has also warned of a complete halt in supplies should price caps on Russian gas and fuel come into effect. Well, Germany's finance minister Christian Lindner has been among the first to respond, saying the decision is a clear indication that, quote, we are economically in an extraordinarily challenging situation, end quote. Continuing, the first priority is fighting inflation, because otherwise it will wash away our economic foundation, Linda told Germany's lower house of parliament during a budget debate. European Central Bank President Christine Lagarde said that that rates would continue to be hiked, quote, over the next several meetings because inflation rates are far too high and is likely to stay above our target for an extended period, end quote. Lagarde highlighted expectations for the remainder of the year, telling reporters, quote, recent data points to a substantial slowdown in euro area economic growth, with the economy expected to stagnate later in the year and in the first quarter of 2023. Economic growth has been revised down markedly for the remainder of the current year, and throughout 2023, expectations for the economy to grow by 3.1% in 2022, 0.9% in 2023, and 1.9% in 2024. So the Europeans are really going to have to really do quite a bit here. Now let's look at what's going on in Germany. Germany is going to subsidize power for small businesses amid the energy crunch. Germany is debating proposals to protect consumers and businesses from high energy costs. German Economy Minister Robert Habeck has now announced an aid package for small businesses. Now, German Economy Minister Robert Habeck on Thursday announced a relief package for businesses to counter a potential energy crisis brought on by Russia shutting down gas deliveries to Europe. Quote, we will protect German companies and German SMEs, Habeck said during the Bundestag budget debate. He said an existing cost-curbing program for industry would be opened up to small and medium-sized enterprises. However, Habeck added that this would be a short-term option and that the government would eventually, quote, change the electricity market design so that favorable costs are passed on to consumers, end quote. Well, Germany will operate subsidies until national and European efforts to curb high electricity and gas prices took effect, according to Habeck. Now, the European Union's plans for an electricity price break were roughly in line with German ideas, Habeck had said. European Union energy ministers are meeting on Friday and are expected to agree on a block-wide plan to address surging energy costs. Habeck said a gas market intervention would be more complicated, but that there would be corresponding efforts to lower prices. By early October, the government was hoping to set up a mechanism to reduce gas consumption by companies in exchange for compensation. However, the most important thing is to put an end to price manipulation by Russian President Vladimir Putin, Habeck had said. On Wednesday, Habeck faced severe criticism from the conservative opposition for his energy policies. The opposition have narrowed in on the decision to keep nuclear power plants on standby rather than boot them up and connect them to the grid. This line of attack was repeated on Thursday with senior Christian Democratic Union politician Jens Spahn questioning why Habeck, a Greens politician, would rather transport oil on ships than use nuclear power. Habeck responded by saying the former government, a coalition between the Christian Democrats and their Bavarian sister party, as well as the Socialist People's Democratic Party, had overseen 16 years of energy policy failure that were now being quickly overturned. So these are some of the issues that are taking place. Now, probably really important, Vladimir Putin has slammed sanctions in a pitch for a new global order. Putin accused the West of attempting to, quote, subordinate, end quote, Russia with sanctions during a speech at the Eastern Economic Forum in Vladivostok. You also announced new deals with China and Myanmar regarding gas and oil. Russian President Vladimir Putin has admitted some sectors of the Russian economy are suffering due to sanctions and political pressure, which he referred to as the, quote, economic, financial, and technological aggression of the West, but remained bullish on building new ties with Asia. Putin made the comments in a landmark speech at the Eastern Economic Forum in the Far East city of Vladivostok on Wednesday. Other challenges of a global nature that threaten the whole world have replaced the pandemic, the Russian president had said. Quote, I am speaking of the West's sanctions fever with its brazen, aggressive attempt to impose models of behavior on other countries to deprive them of their sovereignty and subordinate them to their will, end quote. However, Putin said, quote, no matter how much someone would like to isolate Russia, it is impossible to do this, end quote. And during his speech, Putin said that Russia had been, quote, grossly swindled, end quote, by a grain shipping deal that was reached with Ukraine in July. The deal, brokered by Turkey and the United Nations, was intended to shield the world's most vulnerable people from a looming food crisis. The Russian president claimed only 287 ships went to poor countries and said that Russia had been unable to resume lucrative fertilizer exports, which had been promised as part of the deal. Well, Putin said he would now consider limiting the destinations for grain exports under the agreement. Ukrainian officials hit back later on Wednesday with President Advisor Mykhailo Podolyak calling Putin's proposal, quote, unexpected, end quote, and, quote, groundless, end quote. The agreement signed in Istanbul, Podolyak told Reuters, concern only one issue, and that is the transfer of cargo ships through the Black Sea. Quote, Russia can't dictate where Ukraine should send its grain, and Ukraine doesn't dictate the same to Russia. And yet there's still an oil and gas in limbo. Russia is the world's largest natural gas exporter and the second largest oil exporter after Saudi Arabia. Putin said that Russia would renege on energy contracts if the group of seven G7 countries imposed a price cap on Russian oil, threatening to cut the flow of gas to Europe. Will there be any political decisions that contradict the contracts? Yes, we just won't fulfill them. We will not supply anything at all if it contradicts our interests, Putin had said. Continuing, he said, we will not supply gas, oil, coal, heating oil. We will not supply anything, end quote. Now, hours after Putin's comments, European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen told reporters, quote, we will propose a price cap on Russian gas. We must cut Russia's revenues, which Putin uses to finance this atrocious war in Ukraine, end quote. Well, Putin outlines a new political order. Putin used his speech to lay out a new vision for global cooperation following the February invasion of Ukraine, one in which Iran and other Middle Eastern countries could play a leading role. Quote, Western countries are striving to maintain a former world order that is beneficial only to them, to force everyone to live according to the infamous rules that they themselves invented and regularly violate, rules they are constantly changing for themselves, current circumstances, the Russian president had said. This was also reflected in the attendees at the summit, in Vladivostok, who included Armenian Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan and senior Chinese legislator Li Zhongshu. Putin announced that China would buy gas from state energy company Gazprom in a 50-50 split of Russian rubles and Chinese yuan. Russian officials said Putin is expected to meet with Xi Jinping at the Shanghai Cooperation Organization Summit in Uzbekistan next week. In a virtual address to the Eastern Economic Forum, Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi also welcomed closer cooperation with Russia in the energy sector. Well, Myanmar also inked an agreement to buy Russian oil. Earlier at the Eastern Europe Economic Summit, Putin met with the leader of Myanmar's military junta, Senior General Min Aung Hlaing. Myanmar agreed to buy Russian oil products and to pay in rubles, the state-owned RIA news agency reported. This is Russian news agency. Quote, I am very proud of you because when you came to power in the country, Russia, so to say, became number one in the country. Min Aung Hlaing told Putin, as quoted by a Kremlin statement that translated his remarks into Russian. Now, the meeting marks Min Aung Hlaing's second trip to Russia in 2 months as the Southeast Asian country's military regime becomes increasingly isolated on the world stage. And let me just quickly look here. 1 second. This is very interesting. An investor said that Russia is going to be a totally isolated country. Listen to this report. It's about four minutes and 18 seconds long. 1 second.
Camp Lejeune veterans, pay close attention. If you were stationed at...
1 second. We're going to skip this commercial. Total economic isolation of Vladimir
Putin. Yes. Now that Putin has crossed the Rubicon, now that he's gone into Ukraine, he has no capacity to back down. He views compromise as weakness. He views negotiation. And I've been in a conflict with him for 10 years with the murderer Sergei Magnitsky, and I've never seen him in one instance back down in one way. He only has a forward gear, no reverse gear. And if that is the case, and it is the case, then the only thing we can do is completely and absolutely starve him with the resources like this war.
Is there enough unity here in Davos for that?
At the moment there is, but the real problem that we face here in Davos is that we're going to be at this war probably for a long time. There's going to be a situation where, you know, six months or a year from now, people are going to be suffering from higher oil prices, higher gas prices, higher food prices, and they're going to be less concerned about watching these atrocities on their screen and more concerned about paying their bills. And then the question is, will the unity maintain?
But Ukraine feeds the world. It's Europe's breadbasket. I mean, surely stopping the war would solve this looming food crisis.
But there's no question, and it's not just Europe anymore. We also have India, Bangladesh, Egypt, many countries in Africa that are all completely dependent on food, and there will be countries, there will probably be more deaths in Africa from starvation than there will be deaths from Russian bombs in Ukraine. And the real irony is that the whole world is not surrounding Putin. It's just Europe, United States, Canada, Australia, and Japan. And I think if there's an American expression, it's like the turkey is voting for Thanksgiving. Everybody should be on the side of Ukraine. Everybody should be on the side of Zelensky. We should clear the waters of the Black Sea so that all the food can be exported and the food prices can go back to a normal level.
From your experience in Russia, what sort of Russia is all of this now going to create in the future?
What sort of
Russia?
Well, at the moment, we're going into a North Korea Russia. This is going to be a totally isolated country. This is going to be a pariah state. It's going to be a war country. It's going to be a poor country. And it's going to be a radicalized country. And I don't think you can put the genie back into the bottle. I think that there is, a lot of people say, if Putin were to die today with all the problems in hand. And I think that now that he's stirred the pot and gotten everybody into this crazed anger, I don't know how you get rid of that.
And Ukraine's future?
Well, Ukraine's got a good future if they can defeat Russia. Ukraine could become a member of the EU, could become a proper member of the world community, a democratic country. They could rebuild. But that all the main precondition is they have to defeat Russia, and we have to help them in every way possible.
What about your future? How worried are you about your situation, considering Putin's reach abroad, especially the UK, as we've seen in the past?
It's not just the UK. They come after me here in Switzerland. Two years ago, I was coming to Davos, warned by the British security services that they had received a warning from their Swiss counterparts that there was going to be a Russian attempt on my life. These people aren't messing around. On one hand, I'm in a better position than I was before because the West has now said we're not going to do anything to cooperate with Russia on legal assistance, et cetera. On the other hand, the Russians are now in a desperate situation, all bets are off, you know, no restraint, do whatever they can do. And so I would say more or less I'm in a much more dangerous situation.
Bill Browder, hedge fund manager, political activist, and one of Russia's most wanted men. Thank you very much.
Fascinating. Bear with me a moment.
Okay, bear with me a moment here. I want to move on to some other things. And this is with regard to China. It seems that all eyes are on Xi Jinping at the Party Congress. As China revealed the date of the 20th Party Congress, President Xi Jinping is expected to cement power and secure a third term. On October 16, China's governing Chinese Communist Party, the CCP, will begin its 20th Party Congress, during which Chinese President Xi Jinping is expected to secure an unprecedented third term. The meeting typically lasts about a week, and this year, as the current Congress completes its five-year term, more than 2,000 members of the body will take part in the selection of new blood for the party's Central Committee. Now, some of the Central Committee members will be prompted to the 25-people Politburo. There will likely be some new faces in the seven-member Politburo Standing Committee, the PSC, the party's most powerful organ. Despite some domestic and global challenges, including weak economic performance and growing tensions with the United States, analysts say that setting the date of the Congress for October shows that Xi's authority in the party remains largely stable. Quote, the dates of past party Congresses where leadership changes were usually in November, which was largely caused by negotiation and compromises between different factions, said Xin Wang, an expert on Chinese politics at the National Zhengqi University based in Taiwan. But the fact that the 20th Party Congress will be held in mid-October, as the other past party congresses where there was no leadership change, shows that the foundation of Xi's authority is very solid, he said. Ling Li, a Chinese politician and law expert at the University of Vienna, pointed out that the date of the Congress would not have been announced if the choice of the next party leader remained contested. When a date is announced, we can safely assume that key decision makers have achieved a consensus on that choice. August 30, state-run China Daily wrote that the Congress will focus on the Communist Party's work over the past 5 years, major achievements, and valuable experience of the party's Central Committee with Xi Jinping at the core. The Congress will thoroughly review the international and domestic situation, comprehensively grasp the new requirements for the development of the cause of the party and the country on the new journey in the new era, as well as the new expectations of the people, the article had said. Well, at the Congress, a lot of attention will be on whether Xi will fill the lineup of top officials with his loyalists, including a potential successor, since removing the presidential term limits in 2018, experts say that Xi has continued to focus on preparing for an unprecedented third term. Now, Xi's past two predecessors had both stepped down after serving 2 5-year terms. Xi's past two predecessors had done that for 2 5-year terms. But since becoming the general secretary of the Chinese Communist Party 10 years ago, Xi has dramatically changed China's political landscape, said Deng Biao, a Chinese human rights lawyer based in the United States. So he says, quote, from the perspective of power struggle, Xi Jinping remains quite successful. He has launched an anti-corruption campaign, which he used to install his own people and remove political opponents, Tang advised. Well, Tang also pointed out that ever since Xi abolished the presidential term limit in 2018, he, quote, has turned the Chinese Communist Party from a collective dictatorship to a personal dictatorship, end quote. And several members of the PSC are expected to step down based on their age, based on the age limitation after the 20th Party Congress, as the underlying rule over the last few decades requires official age 68 or older to retire at the time of the next Congress, while those age 67 or younger can be promoted or remain in top positions. Ling Li from the University of Vienna wrote in a recent piece on the Think China that the makeup of the Chinese Communist Party's top leadership organ will be mostly, quote, based on the extent to which Xi Jinping is willing and able to break or change the age limit rule. According to her, if Xi decided to uphold the current age limit, at least two current PSC members will have to retire this fall, whereas the rest of the current membership could remain on the council. Quote, regardless of the extent to which the age limit is to be held, set aside, or changed, the new PSC needs to bring in one or two younger members who can continue to sit on the PSC in 2027 so as to allow a staggered leadership transition then. So who will be the next Chinese premier? Wang from NCCU said one important question is who might be the next premier. In March, the current Chinese premier, Li Keqiang, announced that he would step down within a year. However, in recent months, due to China's poor economic performance and high youth unemployment, Li has been more active in leading efforts to tackle economic and social problems, causing some to speculate whether he might try to challenge Xi's authority. And that speculation doesn't match with the real situation in China, Wang had said. Economic issues, pandemic prevention, agricultural problems, and drought are all under the jurisdiction of China's State Council, which makes Li's active public presence very normal. I think Li is willing to take up these responsibilities while demonstrating his skills in tackling social and economic issues. And some experts have pointed to current Vice Premier Hu Shenhua and Wang Yang, chairman of the Chinese People's Political Consultative Conference National Committee, as possible candidates for China's next premier. Well, the criteria to choose the next Chinese premier is dictated by Xi Jinping's preference and political loyalty, which will be a key criterion, Wang from NCCU had said. So from that perspective, Wang Yang may be more suitable than Hu Chunhua, as he has worked well with Xi over the past 5 years, successfully handling issues related to Taiwan, Xinjiang, Tibet, and the United Front Work Department, he added. So those are some of the major concerns in China. Now, bear with me a moment as I try to find out what else is next. Okay. All right, let's just move on to see what else is going on. 1 second here. 1 second. Here's some interesting news. Evidently, Google's CEO says that he hopes to make the company more efficient, and he hints at potential cuts. So Google and Alphabet CEO Sundar Pichai gave more details about how he is thinking of making Google run, quote, on fewer resources, end quote, as it faces a slew of challenges to its business. Pichai said he hopes to improve efficiency by 20%. He also gave past examples of cutting down a team and merging two products into one. So it seems that Google and Alphabet CEO Sundar Pichai said he wants to make the company 20% more efficient, and that could include headcount cuts as it reckons with a slew of economic challenges as well as years of rapid hiring. Speaking at Code Conference in Los Angeles, Pichai gave more details about how he's thinking of making the company run more efficiently ahead of economic uncertainty and a broader showdown in ad spending. So those are the issues that are being brought there. Well, I think that'll be it for our day. Bear with me a moment. I think that's so. Bear with me a second as I check something else. No, I guess that's about it. So we'll call it a day today. It's Tuesday, the 8th of September. Thanks for being with us today, and hopefully you'll join us tomorrow. Be well and goodbye. Thank you.